Hello and welcome to episode number 60 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
I'm Robert Rosenthal.
And today we have a pair of head coach guests for us. Robert, it's football season. And I mean, it's kind of both football seasons starting
football.
Soon. Football and football.
Mm-hmm.
Illinois soccer will get going this week, August 13th, in their opener at home, also at Demersion Park. So head coach Katie Holteen will be our guest here. And then new softball coach Jenna Hall, who's also an Illini Hall of Famer from her playing days here.
Hall of Fame. I just connected that in my brain there.
It was a call to the hall.
Call when they Hall's need a new coach. Call to the hall.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, Jenna Hall taking over after the U of I parted ways with Tyra Perry. So Jenna Hall's the third softball coach in program history. It's the youngest sport on campus at the U of I since it started in 2001.
No Quidditch team? Is there?
I think that might be a club team. I don't think it's an officially sponsored.
Esports, possibly.
Yeah. You know, there was a time when hockey was discussed about being added, but if hockey's not going to get added, what sport do you want to add? I mean, flag football's getting growing.
When my son was a freshman at Colorado State, he joined, I don't think it was like intramural, but it was like competitive zombie hunting. There was some kind of game they had built around like a Friday night league kind of thing of like, I can't remember how they did it, was some kind of laser tag, but it was like campus organized zombie hunts.
So it was a sport?
I don't know if you could call that a sport. My first reaction to it was like, this is some nerd stuff, like, or whatever, but it wasn't. It was like half the campus involved of this whole like thing of it gets organized and different campus buildings and all this kind of stuff. There was some technology associated with it and this and that. So yes.
Maybe, you know, I've been reading,
we're years away from,
I've been reading the reporting on this changing college athletics, and I have not yet seen that
zombie hunting.
The NCAA is going to have a national championship for zombie hunting.
Yeah. It might stay a club sport for a while, but we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But anyway, Katie Holteen will be our first guest as soccer gets going for her second season, and then Jenna Hall. So what do these people have in common? Shauna Green, Petros Kyprianou, Katie Holteen. They've all orchestrated some nice turnarounds for a women's sports. Of course, Petros Kyprianou oversees men's and women's track and field and cross country.
Yes.
But
yes. They have all put pressure on Jenna Hall to immediately turn around the program and be nationally ranked. Yes.
You're catching on.
Yes, yes.
Both are fantastic conversations. We're so delighted to bring them to you. And again, soccer gets going here pretty quick. And then softball obviously won't start for Jenna Hall until after the new year. But this is a little more relaxed time here in the late summer to get to know her.
Does softball have fall ball? Fall ball for Hall?
Yes,
Hall's fall ball? Are they calling it Hall fall ball?
Hall fall ball.
I mean, we just built that for you. You're welcome. That's a freebie. But yeah,
marketing at its finest.
Yes. Like, I know the baseball team will play like Eastern on a Tuesday night, just like a scrimmage kind of game, but more like, you know, I don't know if the NCAA allows that now. How does that work for baseball?
What do you mean?
Like I remember going last fall in like October to Illinois against Eastern. They're in uniforms. They're playing each other in the fall, but it doesn't count. It's just
right.
It's
a scrimmage.
They allow that, like, because basketball's limited to like you can only scrimmage one other team and it's this and that.
I don't know.
Baseball can do whatever they want.
I don't know that. I mean, I don't know the limits, but I feel like it's usually two games because they don't want to overdo pitching.
Sure. Yeah.
So I think softball does more fall ball games. Mm-hmm. But again, pitching, we can get into it, Jenna Hall. Pitching does not strain in mm-hmm. softball the way it does on an arm in baseball.
Okay. We looked forward to, at some point this fall hall ball. You're welcome. I'm just here with the ideas, folks.
That's right. But there cannot be any fall ball hall or Katie Holteen without first.
Oh, without first lighting the eye.
Katie Hultin is here. She's Illinois' women's soccer head coach, and she's our guest on Light the Eye. In her debut season last year, Illinois had its best start ever at 8-0-1, and the regular season record at 12-4-2 was its best record since 2011. More importantly, a berth into the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament. Katie Hultin, once the goalkeeper coach for Illinois, you left, but then you came back as head coach, and now you're on Light the Eye, so life's going great for you.
It's great. It's awesome. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you so much. Earlier in the year, at the end of the calendar year, Robert and I did a reflect on the calendar year 2025 and best moments in Illini athletics, and we narrowed it down to top five, and then we did something similar at the end of the athletic year, and both times, the story of Illinois soccer last year had to make the list. Congratulations.
Let's go. Yeah. Let's go.
Not that that's your ultimate goal in life to get on our list, but it was a great story and a great showing by your squad last year.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Now the pressure's real, we got to go do it again, but it was a lot of fun last year.
What, season starts this week. August 13th is the season opener, but if you'll allow us to look back for a little bit, what was the secret sauce to a great start for you here?
Wow. I think, you know, Janet Rayfield left the program in good hands in terms of like the quality of people. So I think we acquired a bunch of student athletes who just were really hungry to compete. And we made them compete on a daily basis in training and really, you know, our training environment really emulated what a game environment would be like. And I think that that was probably a little bit of the secret sauce. I think the other part is just total buy-in. They were so hungry. They were eager to learn. And we had some really good leaders in the group as well.
How much, you said you inherited a lot of good things, but how much change did you feel like you had to implement in a hurry, be it on the field, tactically, schematically, or just the culture you wanted in your locker room?
Quite a bit of change, and it happened pretty fast. I think the first semester I was here, so the winter of 2025, we only had 15 players. And so really getting them on board to really understand our identity and who we are and where we wanted to go was important, because they were going to be the ones that were going to really spread the word to the 15 new players that came in last August. And so getting them on board and them to buy in was huge. But I think we really gave the group an identity on the field, an identity of how to play defensively in possession. And that was massive for them. That really helped them sort of navigate hard moments, change, tough opponents, just with that identity alone. And then culturally, I think the biggest thing was just being ultra competitive. Like, of course, there's a lot of kumbaya stuff that goes into teams, but I think culturally we really needed them to be ultra competitive every single day. If you're ultra competitive in our environment, you'll absolutely thrive.
Why?
Because that's what we do. Every training is intense. Every training, like, we're competing in some way, shape, or form. And we believe that if you are competitive in a training environment, it makes the games a lot easier. Like, you know, when the going gets tough, you don't really like rise to the occasion. You sink to the level of your training. And so our training is as hard as, if not harder than, most games.
Let's go back a year and a half. When you heard that Janet Rayfield was retiring, you'd been here before. What, you know, did you have the Illinois job is open? I mean, there had to be some level of like, oh, that's interesting kind of thing. Take me through that process of, you know, when the phone rang and everything else, and how you ended up coming back here.
Yeah. It's all been a blur since then. So I gotta rehash it a little bit. But
sure.
Definitely when Janet retired, I look at her as a mentor of mine. So when she announced her retirement, I was actually kind of shocked. I didn't think she was going to retire that year. And so when she did, I was actually very, very content at Grand Valley where I was. We were really successful. And so I wasn't really thinking about leaving. I'm sure it crossed my mind at some point in time that Illinois could be a job I could take. But then when Josh called, it became a lot more real. Yeah. And I did a lot more research into where the athletic department was 10 years ago versus where it was when he called me.
Yeah.
And it was night and day. And so it slowly became a no-brainer once I got to know Josh and Sarah and Hope and all of the administration and Josh's family. It was just, it really became a no-brainer on that this was going to be my next move.
And was that the first time you had seen the new facilities and everything when you came to see that? Or had you been back after that stuff had been built?
So when I coached at Michigan, University of Michigan, we played at Illinois, but I believe it was the surface was down and the big giant video board was up.
They did a year like that where it wasn't finished yet.
Yeah.
And they kind of half played on the new.
Right. Yeah. And so like the building was going up right behind the bench. But so I'd seen the surface, but I hadn't seen it at its completion. And man, it's the best facility in the country.
Yeah.
Just as a follow up, I asked this knowing probably there's an answer that's different for every coach, but the night and day difference between 10 years ago and now has been a frequent topic here on this podcast.
Yeah.
But I'm curious for a coach, what are some of the mental things you're trying to check off as you're wondering, you know, they're asking, can you as a candidate be our coach? But you're asking, is this a place I want to coach, right? So like, what are some of those things that you might want to check off in your mind? Like, yeah, this is meeting what I need.
Yeah, good question. I think as an Olympic sport, and a women's Olympic sport, I think there's a lot of schools out there, a lot of athletic departments out there that don't invest in Olympic sports or women's soccer. And so I think that was a big piece of it. Like I didn't want to go anywhere that we were just going to be just another team that, you know, served the Title IX purpose basically. And so the biggest thing was like Illinois Athletics invests in all of their sports and cares about all of their sports and cares about all of their athletes and invests in all of them. And I think that was a really big piece. I mean, obviously demersion is one piece of it, but then just the investment they have in women's soccer and all the other women's sports, I think was really powerful. And then just watching administration and learning how they interact with athletes, that is, I know it sounds crazy, but you just don't, there aren't other athletic departments out there where you've got an AD out on the soccer field after the game giving our players high fives. You know, that doesn't happen everywhere. And so here, our administration just cares so much about the athletes and so much about the success of every single program and every single athlete.
Well, and I suppose there's some ADs that maybe want to just be not just the athletic director, but administrations want to just, okay, we're going to be hands off and, you know, you go do your thing. But then there's, I suppose there could be administrations that want to be over involved and you're like, please leave me alone. You know, but it seems that you're not the first coach that says the involvement the administration provides is what actually we need.
It's incredible. They're incredible in terms of their involvement. Like they have everyone's back. And they're just present. They're in and around practices. They know all of our athletes. They meet our needs. And I think it's a really awesome collaborative space to be in with administration and with coaches.
So a year under your belt and the new season starts here in short order. What's the biggest takeaway from year one at Illinois that needs to roll over into year two or change?
Yeah, I think we're always going to combat sort of this confidence piece with, maybe it's just with female athletes, female soccer players, is just we did a lot last year to gain confidence. We need to build off of that. So I think taking that confidence into this season and being confident in who we are and how we want to play is really big. And then layering in, we only scratched the surface last year on how we want to play. And so continuing to layer in new tactical ideas, new, you know, formations, integrating new players into our system. But I think having our athletes, our student athletes, just be prepared and ready to continue to learn and grow every day is going to be massive. We did a lot last year, but we're going to do more this year.
Are you, and I'm not asking you to divulge anything you don't want out there, of course, but are you trying to implement something new schematically, formation-wise? Or, you know, was it a goal to come in and... Let me rephrase that. Did you kind of have to use what was being used and transition into something and get there down the line in terms of tactics, formations, and all that? Or was it kind of you implemented last year and that's kind of the direction you're going?
Yeah, we implemented our game model last year. And I think we did a good job executing our model. I think now we have new players, we have, you know, transfers that have quite a bit of experience. I think we're going to be able to evolve and advance that a little bit more tactically, I would say, and then just be able to solve problems a little bit better. We're really working on improving just our overall soccer IQ on the field and being able to adapt and adjust to what our opponents are giving us.
You had, you know, Sarah Foley was a big part of what you did last year. You step in, you get a senior leader kind of thing. What's that like, a transition of like leadership on the team and everything else when, you know, it's we've had other coaches who've said, like, when I came in and I had a senior who wanted to lead, and maybe there were others besides Sarah, but like, you know, that's great for a first season. How do you transition to the next thing?
Yeah, I would say our biggest leaders this last year were Sydney Stevens, who was like a sixth year. She's been here forever.
Yeah.
And she was just so driven in what she wanted for the program. So I think it's really filling that. And we have really great leaders on the team right now. And Ashley Stellan and Izzy Lee and, you know, some younger ones, Kayla Jackson and Lauren Seppi. But I think the thing that we are going to have to fill is the energy and the drive or just like competitive spirit that like a Sid and a Leah Howard gave us, that if things weren't going right, they were going to let you know. Mm. So we're still trying to find that the leaders with that edge to really hold others accountable, but we do have really great leadership right now. So now it's what can they do on the field in the run of play when the coaches can't step out there and help coach.
And how has camp gone? Like, what have you, you know, what has surprised you? Have you like, oh, this is interesting, maybe we can do a little more of this? You know, is it, you've discovered some things throughout camp?
Yeah, we have some athletes, that's for sure. So I think it's going to be really beneficial in both how we want to attack and how we want to defend. Our wide players are, they're really fast, mm-hmm. really, really fast. And so I think that that's going to change the way we play in moments, especially in transitional moments. I think we still have just a lot of teaching to do in our midfield. We have a really young midfield, so that'll be probably our biggest challenge is teaching them to play within our system. But yeah, we're really excited for the athletes that we've acquired and gained, and I think they're going to help us probably throw a little bit of a variety into our model.
What is the format for the portal for you now? You know, it changes. I'm mostly familiar, obviously, with basketball and football of, you know, when they're dropping the windows from 10 days and they're 8 days or whatever, trying to make it. What's the portal length and how does that work in your world?
Yeah, right now we have two portal windows. One is it's like in December, and it's weird because a lot of players are still playing at that point in time.
Right.
So
right.
It's 2 weeks long during playoffs. And then we have another window that's middle of May. Again, a weird time because most people are out of school by that time. So, yep. Yeah, we have two week long windows that we get to, you know, tap into. Yep. The portal in the fall, like in December, is probably your largest portal and your strongest portal.
Yeah.
And then the one in the spring, we got some really great players out of the spring portal. So just depends. Our portal players, our transfers have really panned out. They're pretty phenomenal, so we're really grateful for that. But we're not, you know, we're trying to get like two or three every time, not half the squad.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
So Kayla Jackson is your forward. She's going to be a junior last year, so she's a returning All Big Ten player. And of course, the opener is against Georgia. She was on Georgia's team 2 years ago when Illinois went there before you were the head coach, and she scored a goal that ended up being the game winner in a 2-0 game. So that's interesting that she will face her former team, and it's here. But I'm just curious what kind of expectations and leadership you want from her, because a lot of last year's goals aren't on the roster anymore.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
And will she be a kind of top of the scouting report?
She should be, yeah. She and Emma Yee will definitely be at the top of most people's scouting reports. Yeah, Kayla is, I would say last year, she exceeded our expectations just because she didn't necessarily have a whole lot of goals her freshman year at Georgia. But last year, she's a player that you just have to have on the field when you're down a goal or you're tied at the end of a game. Like, she is so gritty in and around the box that she's going to find a way. So the hope is that she can do it again this year. She came in a lot fitter than she was last year, probably a lot more hungry than she was last year, a lot more confident than she was last year. So I think she has high expectations for herself as well. So a lot of, you know, our job is to help her manage those expectations and focus on the process more than the outcome. We think that if you trust the process and you take it day by day and not shoot for the moon, you know, every single day, then you just trust the process, you'll be really successful. So that's sort of our goal there. But yeah, we need her to score some goals this year.
And then at the other side, Izzy Lee did an outstanding job for you in goal last year as the keeper. And you know, anybody who watched the World Cup final last month saw how much a goalkeeper can keep you in a game when everything else isn't going right. I mean, Argentina almost,
right,
even though Spain looked so dominant. What's next for Izzy Lee?
Well, she's going to crush it this fall. That's what we believe. And then hopefully end up in the pros. She's got a lot of good interest from the NWSL right now. Would love to see her in with the national team as well. She's worked really hard over the last 6 months to advance her game and develop her game to become a pro, but really to be impactful this fall.
How do you advance your game as a goalkeeper?
Is it
scouting, learning the feel of things, or is it, you know, reaction time can improve? Or
so Izzy came in, when she came in as a freshman, she had never had formal goalkeeper coaching, so her learning curve is just like straight up. Like, it was so steep. And so she learned so much in the last 3 to 4 years. And she's a phenomenal shot stopper, really good in the air. But with the ball at her feet and helping us build out of the back and distribute, that was where she really needed to grow. And so she spent the whole spring focused on distribution, ball at her feet, helping us, you know, basically play a player up when you have your goalkeeper in possession. So.
She's almost operating like a point guard in basketball. Like, that first pass.
Yeah, she starts the attack.
If you go the right way, there's an advantage,
yes,
or a disadvantage.
I'm always curious about that, because that's, you know, in soccer, there's always that. People think the goalkeeper stops shots, yes, but also there's a long ball sent ahead. Do you come out or do you stay in goal? That type of thing. As a former, you know, you were the keeper coach here. How is that taught? So say it's just a drill to, like, okay, they're sending a deep ball. You need to know whether you can get to it or whether you need to stay back. How do you teach that? What do you drill into that?
And just to be clear, you're not about to say, I feel like I could go stop a shot right now. I could just
let's
go
get
stand
out there right
I'm
now.
Sure, I could just stop a few
we
shots.
We could do it.
Yes.
Good question. Female goalkeepers actually don't peak until they're about 28 years old. And that's if they get to that point, right? That's if they're playing at that point. But a main reason is because you just don't have that many reps. You don't get enough game reps with that exact moment very often, right? Mm-hmm. And so we can train it. We can train it a lot, but it's just not the same as a game. So we do. We train all of those scenarios as much as we can. We actually have our entire session when we play larger numbers, whether it's 7v7, 5v5, 8v8, it's always set up so that a goalkeeper has the same amount of space relative to to the game. And so they're able to train reading the play. And really, we talk about, you've got to think so far ahead and understanding the game, you know, in the other half and what's next, what's going to happen. So we talk a lot about speed of thought, speed of action, and just understanding the game overall. So we do a lot of film with our goalkeepers. We do train a lot of different scenarios.
Sure.
But yeah, you see a lot of goalkeepers, they get caught like hesitating second guessing themselves and getting caught in no man's land quite often. And so, yeah, just as a goalkeeper myself, I just know that those things happen. So it is nice because I can give them a little bit of grace in those moments.
Sure.
But yeah, like Izzy's at a point that she's seen quite a bit. So she's going to be able to read a lot of fifth year goalkeepers. It's like a superpower because they've got a lot more reps.
Sure. And I'm assuming on corners, when to punch, when to grab, when to stay. You know, that has to be the number one thing you're looking for. So is that the same thing? Are they watching film that's like, okay, here, we're going to stop the film here. Here's the angle the ball's coming. What are you doing? Are you punching it? Are you staying back? What do you do? I'm fascinated how that works.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever like a solid right answer for goalkeepers. It's really, what did you see and what did you feel in that moment? Because there's moments where, your reaction time was maybe, a millisecond later than it could have been 10 minutes ago. Like, it just, everything's always different. You just have to make the decision within the save. So your just like speed of thought, speed of decision making, speed of action has to be incredible. And so sometimes really the question to ask is like, what were you thinking in that moment? Mm-hmm. And if they were thinking, well, I just didn't feel like I could catch it, then it's like, well, why? Right. And if they're able to explain all of those things, we're in a good spot. If they say, I have no idea, we have a lot more coaching to do. But when you're able to really explain, like, well, I didn't feel like I could catch it because my shoulders weren't squared up to the ball and I felt like I was going to bobble it and there was a bunch of people in front of me, we would much rather you punch it. Right. Yeah. So we just talk through it. It's a weird position because a lot of it is, well, how did you feel in that moment?
Yeah. Yeah. How did that make you feel?
Yeah.
Yes.
Could we circle back to something you said, working on confidence, and maybe specifically that is an issue with female athletes? I imagine it is with men too, but could you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, we talk about confidence a lot, and I think a lot of, I don't know if this is general to people or general to youth players or general to the youth or just general to young people. A lot of people, their confidence or their motivation comes from extrinsic sources. And we don't, that shouldn't be the case. We believe that confidence comes from preparation and confidence comes from past successes. And so we've talked a lot about that. Like, where are you gaining your confidence from? Your confidence shouldn't come from us as coaches. Like, your confidence should come from you putting everything you can, being your best self every single day in training, so that you're prepared to go into a game or into the next thing. And then revisiting your past successes or your past moments to reflect on that. And that is where confidence should come from. So we do a lot of kumbaya stuff when it comes to that, because we one of the greatest mindset tools is identity, is like understanding who you are and what you stand for and where your confidence comes from. Like, if you want a like killer mindset on the court, you really have to understand you like as best as you possibly can. And if you're just relying on extrinsic sources for your own confidence or your own motivation, like, you're never really going to be driven enough to be successful.
And does that equal winning, or is winning sort of a goal in that? Like, the hunger, the desire to win, to beat the opponent, is that something that gets built, or do you sort of find that?
I think winning is an outcome, right? And so if you take care of the processes day in and day out, you have great habits and you have a lot of drive and belief every single day, success is going to usually come. But yeah, I think we really focus on the moments and the days, like what's important now. We always say win, what's important now. Like, focus on the now and what you can control right now. And if you can control those things, like, they'll just stack up and add and you'll be successful in the end. But you got to have drive and you got to have belief in order to be successful. So if you can show up every day with drive and belief, which part of that is confidence, you'll find success.
I promise not every one of my questions is going to be about goalkeepers, but
I love it. I love goalkeeping.
Based on, you know, what you're talking about, you know, there was a debate a lot during the World Cup this summer of, gosh, goalies yelling after the central defenders did something has really accelerated even since the last World Cup, of like somebody didn't get the clearance that the keeper thought they should have. He's screaming at the guy, you know, in the World Cup and this and that. I'm sure there has to be that level for, in a sense, it has to be like, guys, we have drilled this. You need to do this, where he's yelling at them versus that. With your players, you know, for your keeper, are you teaching them like, hey, sometimes you've got to be the leader in that moment and say, this is what we're in and you have to be right here, versus, oh, the, you know, they let a corner kick go and the goalie just yelled at somebody kind of thing?
Oh, no. I think a goalkeeper has to be a massive presence and a great communicator and understand the game well enough to be able to communicate what should have happened or needs to happen next time. I was the crazy goalkeeper that would just like lose my mind on people in front of me. I've grown
we'll
a lot. Yeah, I've grown a lot in the last several years. But I think too. Like, I mean, the goalkeeper has such a massive responsibility if those center backs get beat and they're playing against the best in the world. So yeah, I don't blame any goalkeeper for respectfully holding people accountable in front of them, but. The level of adrenaline that is running through their veins is insane. And so I'm sure a lot of that is coming out of their mouth is just pure adrenaline, because they're just like in this constant state of fight or flight.
Yeah. And so you would then maybe have some keepers that you're coaching that like, hey, you need to speak up there. Like,
oh, yeah.
I need, maybe some go over the top with, as you were describing yourself, but maybe some aren't vocal enough.
Yeah, I mean, when we're recruiting, one of the things when we're looking at goalkeepers, obviously you're looking at presence. So presence is how are you looking on the field? How do you act on the field? Do you have a vocal presence? Do you have a physical presence? If you have a vocal and physical presence, that's a big bonus. And then, are you brave? And bravery is something we can't teach. Presence is also something we can't really teach. And so if you have those intangibles, you're already like higher up on our list, because those are things that are really hard for us to go teach you. So bravery and presence and like this vocal just demand it's awesome. When a goalkeeper has that, you're like, yeah, she's got it.
That's great.
Let's talk schedule. You know, Big Ten schedule is set by the Big Ten. Wisconsin is the Big Ten opener, by the way, on Thursday, September 10th. But you have five non-cons before that, and it starts with Georgia on the 13th on a Thursday. So, good luck. You're just going to start with an SEC team.
Yeah, so. Yeah, our schedule.
But it's here at home.
Yeah, some of our schedule, like non-con, is still from the previous staff and just contracts that we have to fulfill, and that's the Georgia one. When I built the non-conference schedule, we didn't have the Big Ten schedule. So we right now have the 11th hardest schedule in the country when you look at overall, because our non-con is so hard and our conference is so hard. Folks,
Georgia, Cincinnati, and Virginia Tech are the power programs that are on your non-con schedule. And then you also have UIC, St. Louis, and Western Michigan.
Yes. All very, very tough opponents, good opponents. But that should all really prepare us for the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. And opening with Wisconsin is going to be massive. The thing that they've changed with scheduling this year is, so they've pushed the national championship back a week or two. And so it's spread out the game. So we still have the same number of games across two extra weeks. And the reason they did it is because having, you know, athletes, very, very good athletes, cram 20 games into less than 3 months is just not physically
when they're all
healthy.
Running like 5 miles for a match and or whatever the number is.
We have players that run 12 miles in a match.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you do two of those in a weekend, it's a lot. So they've balanced it out. So we basically have a single game weekend, double game weekend, single game weekend, double game weekend, like all the way through the season. So we have hopefully more rest. hopefully we get to stay healthier. That's the hope that we're all hoping for. But yeah, it's a single double rhythm all the way through the season, which should be good.
And what did you learn about this relatively new Big Ten after a year in it?
Yeah, I've always been really familiar with what was the Pac-12. I played in the Pac-12. I coached in the Pac-12. I'm just really familiar with sort of the West Coast. So that's not surprising in terms of their caliber. They are very different. Like, I think they're really different to the rest of the Big Ten in terms of not necessarily style of play, but just technical ability. They're primarily West Coasters that are just like small tiki-taka, they move the ball really well. Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is the travel. And I think we're really lucky that we're right in the middle of the country and we're not like having to go, you know, East Coast to West Coast as much. But yeah, we go to USC, UCLA this fall and we play one of our Big Ten Network games at USC at 7:30 Pacific time, which is 9:30 our time. I know basketball does that kind of stuff all the time, but we don't play at 9:30 body time very mm-hmm. often. So that'll be a tough one. It's tough for me. We did it last year at Oregon and there's a picture of me at halftime and I looked like I needed to be in bed. I was really tired. But the players are fine. Like they stay up later anyway, but yeah, it is interesting for the physiological side of it.
What has typically been the Big Ten style? Like what compared to what you were describing the Pac-12 style was?
Yeah, I would say...
Is it more physical or is it...
Yes. So I would say the Big Ten is the best soccer playing conference in the country in terms of like top to bottom. We all play a lot of possession, keep the ball. Every given year, you're going to have like two teams that try to go a little more direct. But
sure.
For the most part, very possession based, but very physical. Like... big, strong, fast. Like you go to Nebraska and you're like, holy smokes, like mm-hmm. these players are like all 6 feet tall and they're just gonna knock you off the ball. It's just so different than the West Coast. So the West Coast, they're just smaller, quicker athletes, and the rest of the Big Ten just like big, strong, fast, moves the ball well, but just big.
Yeah.
I wanted to highlight, because we do get questions about, hey, what should we go see if folks are mainly in the football basketball world, and like go to a soccer match. So I'll just highlight football hosts Duke on September 12th. Well, the next day you have Michigan here.
Yeah.
And also the preceding Thursday Wisconsin's in. But what did you love about the immersion atmosphere last year? And is there anything you want to tell us about what's coming this year?
Oh man.
For coming to experience a soccer match.
Yeah. No, last year we only had 6 home games. I think this year we have 12. So a lot more opportunity to come see games. I guess my fear is that like, cause there's more games, people will wait till later, but I want immersion packed every single game. I think, you know, we're trying to really reach out to the community. We want not only students to be there, but we want our whole community to be out there. At every game, we've moved our games a little earlier, so our evening games are at 6 to really sort of be conducive to those families mm-hmm. and trying to get them to bed at a decent time. I have my own kids, so I get it. And then we've got 2 events. We got this party at the pitch against Georgia and Michigan State, and I'm sure we'll post it at some point. But it's I don't know. You pay a little bit of money, and you get to come into a special area at the stadium, free booze. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Booze, food.
You had me at, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it's free if you're paying $50, but it's all you can drink.
Yeah.
All you can drink, all you can eat. And then we're doing a little like chalk talk before the game with myself. But it's, you know, we just want to like make a really cool environment where fans don't feel like they have to sit in the stands the whole time. Like they can be up, they can mingle, they can get together. There's a lot of camaraderie behind it. You know, most MLS games and NWSL games have beer gardens, and we want it sure. to be really fun and a loud environment. That's what makes it so enjoyable. Sometimes you sit in games and it's not a very exciting game because it's soccer sometimes and it's 0-0 and it can get quiet, but you can still be loud and rowdy in the stand. So We really want our stands to be full every single game this
year.
Do
you know the game is boring if it's boring? Are you feeling bored ever at the sideline?
I'm never feeling bored because the level of stress is crazy. But no, it's I can see where if you're watching it and 0-0 and the ball hasn't like gone into the 18 yet, it could be boring.
Is the stress different for you if it's 0-0 in the 80th minute versus it's 3-3 or 4-3 and, you know, like, is there a relatively high scoring game? Is that more stressful than a?
It's all stress. I mean, it's fun stress. Pressure's a privilege. But like last year, we were playing Penn State and it was a back and forth game. We went down a goal, we tied it up, went down a goal, tied it up, went down a goal, tied it up. And it was 3-3 with 6 minutes left. That was, I mean, like, all these extra wrinkles I've gotten in the last year are from that game, I think. Like, that was so crazy. And then we scored and with 6 minutes left. And so that whole game was so exciting, but a little bit of stress. And then those last 6 minutes after you score the game-winning goal, it's like, how do I hold on for six more minutes?
That's what I was going to say. It's like, just from watching soccer, as a fan, the most stressful moment for me is a 1-0 lead or a 2-1 lead when the other team has all the possession.
Yeah.
And it's just like, just the clock is moving so slow and this and that. That's when I would probably, I could never coach, but that's when I would be falling to the ground.
It is. Like last year, I want to say the Boston College game, we were up 1-0. And I remember the end of the game. It was all at the other end where by Izzy, and our back line was just like, they were just a wall. Mm-hmm. And Boston College just kept coming and coming and coming. They stood strong. And the years past, like the year prior, they gave up a lot of goals in the last few minutes. We did a really good job this last year of standing strong at the end of games.
Will there be something that you think, if this year goes well, this is what Illinois soccer will have kind of been known for? You know, I mean, every team has maybe their own style or whatever. We say, yeah, we... Is it obvious we scored more goals than the other side, right? But like, yeah, we will have been winning in very low scoring games, or the defense coaches will be annoyed at our defense.
Whatever. Ours is our press.
Okay.
We have a really good organized identity defensively, but our press is, it's a big part of who we are. And we scored over 30 goals this last year and over half of them were from our press. And so when you have forwards that can be your best defenders, that's big. And so that's, if you were to ask other coaches in the Big Ten right now, that's probably what they would say too, is like Illinois has a very good organized structure in how they defend higher up the field.
And at the risk of leaving somebody out, a newcomer or two that you expect to be key this year, because we did touch on Kayla back and Izzy and Emma Yee, but there's transfers and freshmen.
Yeah, so we got a few transfers in January. Hedda she played at USF, Southern Florida, and at Morehead State. So we're her third school. If you know anything about some of these World Cup teams, Hedda is very much like Erling Haaland, played for Norway, plays just like him. It's crazy. Hmm. She can score goals. She's a talented, very tall forward. Alyssa White came to us from Oregon State, crafty little center mid. She's going to be really impactful. And Ava Rango came from Virginia Tech. She'll play in the midfield. The crazy thing is we have three Virginia Tech transfers that will all be impactful. Kylie and Ashley will play center back, which is massive. They came in the...
And Virginia Tech's on your schedule.
Coincidental?
Coincidental. It wasn't like, let's schedule Virginia Tech. And then, oh, wow, well, look.
Yeah, so we have three Virginia Tech players. And then we've got, who else do we have? Gabby that came from Howard. She was phenomenal at Howard. Transferred to Houston for last semester. Didn't really love it, but she's a crafty little player. Like, our transfers are going to be great. And our freshmen, we've got a couple that should be able to get quite a few minutes. And then one of our freshmen is, her name's Ashley Smith. And it's hard to believe this, but she is taller than Izzy Lee. She's our freshman goalkeeper that is taller than Izzy Lee, which is hard to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thursday at Demergen Park, the 13th of August, the first Illinois athletic competition of the year. You always get that honor.
Yes, we do.
Yes, and it'll be against Georgia.
Yes, it'll be a big game. It's like family night. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Come on out and see Illinois soccer. And Katie, we hope you can come to us here again on Light the Eye. We really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
All right, thanks for doing it.
That's Katie Hultin, Illinois women's soccer head coach. Light the Eye is brought to you by Logic Coworking in Champaign. Let's say you are, I don't know, a linebacker, and you just want to dive into that playbook and really understand the new defense, and you just want a distraction-free environment to do that. You could go do that at Logic Coworking. You might find Robert or myself there as well. Whatever your project or studying or task is at hand, it's an ideal workspace for you. It's a bright, welcoming environment, and if you decide to sign up for a monthly membership, you get 24/7 access to best-in-class amenities, and you can find a workspace designed for you to be inspired, connected, and supported. But they also offer day passes. Just $15 allows you access from 9 to 5, and it's adjacent to both the Bake Lab for a coffee or a pastry and Napoli's Italian restaurant. And if you need a dedicated space like a regular cubicle or an office for you to run your business or your remote working from, they have those amenities for you as well. Don't forget fast Wi-Fi, printing, kitchen, showers, and lockers, all at your disposal at Logic Coworking. At the corner of Neal and St. Mary's, Logic Coworking, sponsoring Light the Eye. Our next guest on Light the Eye is Jenna Hall, newly named last month as head coach of Illinois softball, just the third head coach in program history. And what a history she has as a former player here as well and a member of the Illini Athletics Hall of Fame. But she has established quite a coaching resume, including her most recent stop at Ohio University, where she was a MAC Coach of the Year and led the program to 30-plus wins in each of her four seasons there. Couldn't be more pleased to have Jenna Hall here with us. Welcome in.
Thank you so much. Excited to be here.
Yeah, and we are catching you hopefully a little bit calmer moment for you when your hiring gets announced. Of course, there's a lot of interviews, and we expressed our interest in having you here, but finally schedules have allowed for you to come in, and we couldn't be more pleased to have a little bit of a chat for you. How has this transition been?
It's been amazing. I will say I don't feel like I'm drinking out of the fire hose anymore. It was a little crazy there for a while, but all good things and all great reasons to be going crazy a little bit. But yeah, it's been amazing. It's been almost like a welcoming home experience. I feel like everybody that I've talked to and just encountered, it's always like, welcome back, welcome home, you know, welcome back to Champaign. And so to hear that is, you know, it's a really good feeling and super grateful for it.
A few weeks ago, I was just back in my hometown for a day, and I had a similar experience. Like, oh, this is all familiar, but yet there's a lot of things that are new and the fire hose experience. So that must be like an interesting pairing of this all is familiar, but yet there's a whole lot that's new here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if there isn't progress, you know, you would be disappointed. And so I think anytime you come back to a place that you haven't been to in a little while, and I mean, whether it was 2019 when I came back or before that when I was coaching at Ohio State, when we play Illinois, is every year I've been back, I feel like it just keeps growing in so many different ways, whether it's campus or the athletic facilities. But it's exciting to see how much Champaign has grown.
You know, the standard question is, how different does Green Street look now?
Very different.
See, you were here. When did you graduate?
2006.
Yeah. So a little bit of that development was starting, but not the towers and everything.
No, the high rises and the towers, like that was all new after we left. And it looks, you know, more like a downtown city of like Chicago per se than it does like Champaign 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about the Armory? We were chatting a little bit about like anytime we have somebody in here, I'm like, yeah, I had a class on the third floor, but it was actually 3B, not 3A. And like,
oh yeah,
go up this stairway, not that stairway. Do you have any Armory memories?
Definitely got lost here multiple times as a freshman for sure, and even after that I don't remember too many classes, but I just remember running around that track
Yeah.
Multiple times, yeah, back in the day when Coach Sullivan would put us to work.
That's right. Yep. That's right. So you played for the first coach here, and you're the third coach here. So
yeah, third coach, and that was the third class to ever come here, too. So it's a kind of interesting number. Yeah.
Yeah. What's it like, you know, being back? You have a new facility, obviously, and all that. So
it's been great. I mean, the facility, again, the clubhouse was built not too far after I had graduated from the Martin family, and then the continued addition with the indoor facility that we have. It's just, I mean, the field itself, the scoreboard, everything that's they've put into it, you can just see the investment. You know, when you walk up to that field, if you've been an Illini fan over the years, you can see that investment. And it's a really good feeling. And our girls love to call it home. It's a great facility for them to spend time in. And that hitting indoor that they've built for us is just unbelievable. And it sets us apart from, you know, a lot of, especially in our conference even, to have our own individual facility is amazing.
I'm sure you've gotten this question, but when did you get the coaching bug? Was it in you as a player, and was there ever that in the back of your mind that one day I'll be back here?
You know, it's funny, I was going to be a teacher. My mom was a teacher, and I kind of wanted to follow in her footsteps and impact people in that way. And you know, when I got the opportunity to play professionally after I graduated, I got to play around some, you know, world-class high-level coaches and players, and it really kind of showed me that there's so many ways to impact this game, and also that teaching obviously was an option, but coaching is kind of in the same realm per se. And I think when I decided to get into the coaching piece, which was mostly like after I graduated, it was always at the forefront of my mind to come back here at some point as the head coach. If, you know, we all have our dreams and our thoughts about those things, and timing is always a big part of this, but it was something I talked about from the beginning. And I had just run into an old teammate of mine. Her daughter's in the recruiting world now, and she turned and looked at me after I got the job, and she goes, "You said you were going to do this." And I was like, "Yeah, like I said this 20 years ago, that this was what I wanted to do." And she's like, "You did it. Like you did what you said you were going to do from the beginning." And I never really thought about that, but it's something I've talked about for a really long time.
You know, your boss, Josh Whitman's in a similar position.
Yeah.
I believe the story goes, as soon as he learned that there was such a thing as an athletic director, he decided he wanted to be the AD at Illinois.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this place just leaves an impact on you in a way that it's hard to describe. And I think, especially as an athlete, you get a special experience, and the fan base, the community, the collective feeling as athletes in general, just to want to be great and wear this brand. I think you feel that from the first time you step on campus, and it leaves an impact. And if I can be as successful as Josh Whitman here at Illinois, that would be that would be something, because he's done an amazing job since he's been here.
What was that first call like? I mean, you know, there's an interview process and all that, but surely you had an idea when you got a call that this could happen.
Yeah, you know, I'd seen the news of the opening, and we were at the MAC tournament. And I got a call during the tournament, and thankfully they were very, you know, finish your tournament, finish your season, and, you know, go out and do everything you want to accomplish, and then give us a call when you're ready. And, you know, we lost that little earlier than I anticipated in the semis. And so when I got back to Athens and took care of everything with my team, you know, I gave Sarah Burton a call, and a couple phone calls, got on campus, and about a week waiting period. And I was, you know, just jumping. I couldn't sleep. I was just waiting for that phone call. And it actually came on my birthday, which was a pretty cool birthday present. So, yeah.
Was the first time you met Josh Whitman when he surprised you at Ohio State with the Hall of Fame thing? Because they put that video out years ago.
Yeah.
I think he just showed you were at like a hitting practice or something like that for the team. And what was it? Illinois was playing at Ohio State that night or something like that?
Yeah, I was at our hitting facility. We were actually getting ready to leave on a trip. I think it was a Thursday, and we were taking off for a weekend. And I was working out with some of the girls, and I ran into Hope, his wife, in the facility across that at Ohio State. And she's like, "Josh was actually just looking for you." And I was like, "Oh." And I was like, "Well, I'll be over there if, you know, he wants to say hi," because I'd never met him. Mm-hmm. And then he came in and gave me the news. And I mean, I wish I'd been better prepared with my outfit, but it was a practice day. So, but it was, I mean, that was such an amazing moment for him to be able to do that in person. And you know, my reaction says it all.
You see him, and that there's cameras behind. You have to be in this, like, what is going on right now?
Yeah, someone had like a camera and was just like filming us. And, and he's like, "Come out of the cage." And I'm like trying to get it out.
What's happening?
It was quite a surprise and a really cool moment. I definitely, you know, won't forget that for sure.
Yeah. How many softball players are in the Illinois Hall of Fame? Is it you and Nicole Evans? Is that the only?
No, I think there's four, but I think it's myself, Nicole, Daniel Zimkowitz and Meredith Hackett.
Okay.
I actually just ran into Meredith Hackett this last week, and we both got inducted to the Illinois Sports Hall of Fame. It's a newer one for the state of Illinois, and it was really well represented by Illini. Tom Michael was there, and I sat next to Richard Mendenhall, and there was a lot of people that were there, so it was pretty cool.
Great.
Jenna Hall is here with us. Can you talk a little bit about your coaching philosophy and how you approach the game and building a program?
Yeah, you know, I think coming here when I did all those years ago at the beginning of this program, I had the special experience of learning what it looked like to build a culture. Only having been the third class and being new to, you know, the softball world, I got to see Coach Sullivan kind of implement these things over time, and just how you kind of consistently build something. And so taking that experience as a player, you know, going through a handful of different head coaches as an assistant, you know, I spent my time just kind of navigating what I was believed in, what it is that I want to be about if I ever take this step. And I had never had an intention to be a head coach. It was always just wanted to be an assistant and didn't know if the head coaching realm was for me. But when I did, I think, you know, I learned that authenticity and genuineness are the key to all of this. And so for me, it's about people. My philosophy is to love them hard, to coach them hard, and to work to get the best out of them in that way with, you know, good character, good integrity, and just saying, doing what I'm say I'm going to do. I think players tend to believe in the system more when they see you as the example of what you're trying to put forth. And so I saw that from Coach Sullivan on the regular and my other head coaches over time. And, you know, for us, it's, how do you want to be coached? How do you grow the fastest? How can we figure out what that looks like and then implement that for each player individually?
I'm sure you're not going to walk around the clubhouse like, you know, I have program records and batting average and slugging percentage and all these different numbers that you hold. Yeah. But still, does that impact, let's say the authority of your words and all that? Can you kind of go, hey, you know, I did this. Look.
Yeah.
I hit 481 for a year. Why aren't you?
Yeah, it's so easy. Just go ahead. But no, I mean, so
in this day and age, there's different paths to being a coach,
for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's Texas Tech has a coach that didn't start coaching until after he started, you know, coaching high school out of college. I mean, it's just different paths there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, it's funny when I came back and I was walking through the facility. And like my trophy was here, my name was over here and all these things. And I'm like, it's amazing. And I have so much pride of being an Illini. And obviously I don't think we should, you know, talk about my time. I think that's the one thing I've learned about players is like, unless you are playing right now, your relevancy is like zero. You know what I mean? Like Coach Piper, one of my assistants, she's pretty close in and out of the game. So she kind of has that tie to the current generation. But for me, it's like, I think if anything, I can link to them in just my pride and my passion and how much I love this place. And I think that was on the initial phone call with the team, because Josh made it very clear, which I appreciated on the call. Like, we didn't just hire Jenna because she's an alumni and she was a good player. We hired her because she's a good coach and she's developed herself to get to this point. And so I want them to know, obviously, I can play. I played at this level, you know, a while ago. But so I know what the mentality takes and the physicality, but it's their time. You know, it's my time to be here to guide them and for them to trust me through the process, but it's their time to be on the wall next, you know.
I saw you shared an acronym you use with Hall, your last name. What is that?
It's just the four pillars of our culture. I have a really good friend, Beth Tarina. She's the head coach at LSU softball, and she literally texts me at like 3 a.m. one time when I'd just gotten this Ohio job, and she was like, I had a dream about your last name. And I was like, tell me more. And so
go on.
She tells me this story, and literally everything she's telling me is exactly what I had written down in my note. It was the weirdest like crossover. And so I was afraid to use the acronym at first because I didn't want to make it about me. But it kind of just fell into place and it'd be easy to remember. And it kind of talks about this hallway path that we have with these culture pillars and things like that. But it's heart, attitude, legacy, and loyalty.
Heart, attitude, legacy, loyalty.
Yep.
I don't know what you would have done if you were named Zimkowitz.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what Z would have done if that was a... I'm sure she has her own acronym, knowing that girl. Yeah.
What's priority number one? You, at this point, here in August, you have your roster set. But where do you want to go priority-wise in the softball realm?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, you know, thinking about this process of coming in and where the program's at and getting to know these players. I think getting to know these players was the first thing. So a lot of phone calls, a lot of conversations about who they are, what this program means to them, what they see as the challenges they've faced, what they see as the characteristics and the positive qualities that they have as a team and as individuals. And so figuring out that, and I figured out really quickly that they love this place and they're super passionate about it, and they have not thought twice about any other opportunity besides being in Illini, you know. And you saw a lot of these players stayed on roster, and you know, if they're committed to this, then we're committed to this too. And you know, we brought in some new players, some left, and that's just part of what college athletics is now. But for me, it was just, how do I get to know these players and these young women? How do we then take the next step on the field, right? So implementing what it is that our philosophies are as coaches, getting them into the system as quickly as possible, getting them to understand the culture. Because, you know, for me, I've never been one that talks about winning a lot. I know I'm really impressed with Josh when he can come in and say, we will win, and then make it happen. You know, after that, that's not really my MO, but we learn how to become winners, and we are winners in the process. And so getting them to believe in and to invest in the process, I think, is step one.
Back in when you chose Illinois, what was the process there? You were playing at Manuka High School.
Yes. Yeah.
So what was it that kept you in state? And talk me through that process.
Yeah, I mean, the competitive travel ball world is what it is now is not what it was 20 years ago plus, sure. Obviously. So I was a regional player. Coach at the time, Terry Sullivan, she was just actually in the process of getting ready to start this program when she was recruiting us. And so it was my sophomore year, I got a letter from them, and I didn't even know that they had known who I was or been watching. I mean, I played on daddy coached ball teams and massive. And so I was just kind of a regional local player, and went to a few other camps at other schools, but they were the one school that was like really pursuing me and wanted me to come there. And then I knew a lot of the girls that were in that initial class because they were from the region. And then one of my travel ball teammates had just committed as well. And so Coach Sullivan and Coach Tobias came to my house, and my mom made them dinner back when you did home visits, and did all that and sat down. They made me an offer, and it was just like every recruit says, it's a feeling, you know, and you really can't describe it. And, you know, they sold me on what this program was and what it was going to become and the vision. And I think that's where I kind of also link back to Coach Sullivan, is like, right now I'm selling a vision, right? I'm selling a vision in our staff and this university, obviously, and everything that comes with it. But so hearing her sell a vision was really impactful for me too.
We chatted a little bit before we started recording about how Nick Offerman, who's from Manuka, has gone on podcasts, like national podcasts before, and talked about the rivalry, the Sharks versus Jets of Manuka and Shanahan,
yes,
and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So tell me some of that. Like, you know, I'm sure he's the most famous person from that region.
Hands down.
And he went to school here and everything else. So
yeah.
And you were saying you were one of your teachers was his dad?
His dad, yeah. His dad was my eighth grade social studies teacher. And I think when I started watching Parks and Rec, it was like watching Mr. Offerman in eighth grade social studies with like the mustache and the voice and like the like just the straight monotone like stoic kind of guy.
Woodworking into all of his examples in class.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, so he had many examples and metaphors, and he was just such a He's not a worldly guy in the sense of like you felt like he was always going to teach you something. Like there's always something to learn from him. And then, yeah, the rivalry was real. I mean, we all went to different like intermediate schools, and then we all came together for high school. And there was a lot of like, which one did you come from?
Where are you from?
Yes, and so you quickly came together. But yeah, it's really cool to see him, obviously, the success he's had as an actor.
You were a history major. Did Nick Offerman's dad influence that?
Absolutely. I guess you could probably tie that back to him from the very was the history and the woodworking together.
Yes.
Just kind of like solidified everything for me.
Yes.
Do you still pay attention to history? Do you even like when you have that free time that all coaches have, right?
All the free time.
Are you reading up on history or
I mean, for sure. I definitely read my nonfiction, you know, books from time to time and when I have the time. But yeah, I'm a big history channel and, you know, Animal Planet and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the outlook for this season? What do you approach a first year as?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess what's the portal timing for softball?
They just changed it this summer. Like everything is changing. We changed it to after the World Series.
Got it.
For about 15 days.
So it used that to gave be, you the ability to...
Yeah, it helped me. I think in all new coaches, I think it was helpful for the ones that got hired decently quick after season. And that was a big, I think, thing for Josh was to try to get the new coach in within time for the portal, you know? And
yeah.
So I got hired on the day after it opened. So it gave me a little time for sure to work with it. But yeah, they pushed it back after the World Series.
Yeah. So that's your first ability to shape the roster. Yeah. And here's what we're going to do. And I guess you had to meet your players and who was staying and who was leaving and yeah. everything else. That had to be a crazy 2 weeks there.
It was. Yeah. You know, they announced it on, I got the call Sunday. We did some, you know, contract stuff Monday. And then Tuesday morning, it was telling my Ohio team, and the announcement came out. Then it was meeting with the Illinois team, and then it was, hey, can you be here tomorrow? And I said, yeah, sure. So I got in the car on Wednesday, and I've been here pretty much ever since. And a lot of conversations I met with players that first day I got here that were in town that I could get face-to-face with. One of our players flew from Austin, Texas, just to meet me. Wow, and like, great. So I think, you know, that was – a lot of them are reaching out, wanted to see me, wanted to come to town, sit down face to face. And that again spoke to me about their commitment to this place and what this place means to them, and really good conversations. And I think, yeah, like you said, the first objective is to get the culture and, you know, the connections of the players lined up, and how do we get them to, you know, buy into the system. And then the next piece is, I think season is something that we look at down the road. But I think one of the first talks we had as a team was like, we need to think big. Like, we need to dream big. We need to think big. We need to focus on a bigger picture and not limit ourselves. Obviously, invest in the process, like I said earlier, but, like, don't limit ourselves to what the big vision is, because if we're present in the day, we can hopefully do enough to move the needle forward the way we want to.
Well, this world of college athletics, maybe fairly or unfairly, can expect coaches to turn things immediately.
Like, but Katie.
Yeah. 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 That's the expectation.
Shauna.
We're
going
now. Yeah. Yep.
All of them. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but when you say think big, mm-hmm. does that include 2027?
Yeah. I mean, why not? I think we're only limited by our perception of what that is. And so, like, again, if we stay in the process, we can keep the vision to be what it is and shoot for the thing that we find achievable, but also like a step forward in a way that's noticeable. And I think that's the one thing I want them to kind of think about is how do we leave the past where the past is and then take the things that are going to help us move forward into the next step. And it's not many opportunities in college where you get a new staff and a coaching change. It doesn't happen as often as people think just because of how much coaches move. But they get a clean slate to let's start fresh and see what our eyes look like moving forward.
Well, I agree. The past is the past, but it wasn't that long ago. I mean, I had the privilege of calling some of these games. You know, 3 NCAA berths in mm-hmm. 4 years before COVID. There was one right after that, Big Ten tournaments. And there was a time where Illinois was knocking on the door of the top tier teams in the Big Ten. It's not like it can't be done. Correct. In Champaign-Urbana.
100%. And I think when I say the past, a lot of it's like, okay, my players, were they a part of that? Were they a part of that last
no.
postseason? And so, like, their experience is like, how do we navigate their experience? And I totally agree. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind. And I don't think, to be honest, I think when coaches take jobs, and I can only speak for myself, you know, I had this really good conversation with Shauna Green on my interview about her experience taking over this, you know, the women's basketball program and the things that people were telling her ahead of time. And you don't take these kind of jobs without a vision of what you think it can be, you know. And I think, like you said, Illinois is not far off. It hasn't been very long. And so what can we do to get back to that place? You know, the Big Ten has changed in the last couple of years, obviously, with the addition of the West Coast teams and the shifting. But it only makes our conference stronger, and it makes our softball stronger in general. So it's not far off, and I think that's why the vision can be bigger.
Stylistically, is there something that you have sought in your winning seasons at Ohio, or where mm-hmm. you were in programs past? You were an assistant, of course, at Ohio State, at Pitt, and all that. But, you know, do you seek the power? Do you seek, you know, elite pitching, fielding? What is it that will be a hallmark of a Jenna Hall team?
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody wants the pitching in our sport. It's just, it's the way it is. It's like the quarterback, right? It influences so much what we do. Obviously, we're going to pursue the best pitchers we can find. I think when it comes to if you watch us play, hopefully in the future, I love speed and athleticism. And obviously, I want to hit for power as much as possible. It's part of the game now. And, you know, in my previous school were able to hit close to 100 home runs this last year, and how do we continue on that offensive path so that way like our defense can free flow and play well, because we know we can deliver runs on the scoreboard, and that's the way the game is trending too. You saw, you know, like UCLA hit over 200 home runs last year, which is insane, but that's the way the game is going. So how we found some elite level hitters that can get us on the board, but we're going to be athletic, we're going to be fast, we're going to be passionate, very, very competitive to the last pitch, and you're hopefully should be able to feel that experience when you come out to watch a game.
I'm curious, the there was a, my wife were on a trip in April, late April, we were sitting somewhere on a Saturday, and she was noticing how much softball was on all the TVs in the sports bar we were on. And I'm like, look, it's SEC. They do this thing where it's like, hey, we're going to jump to this SEC game and this and that. And because they have the contract. I mean, it's like, how do you compete with, hey, come to an SEC school and you're going to be on ESPN every Saturday morning and they're going to, you know, feed all of this stuff. And it's all, you know, how do you compete with that softball juggernaut to the South?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things you have to look at and know what your strengths are and know what your program offers. And it's not about comparing. It's about selling this, you know. And I think it's easy to say, oh, you can go south and be outside all the year and not have to worry about an indoor facility.
Right.
But there's things that we do that they don't do as well. The way we train indoors, the way we prepare for different elements, I think it makes us more versatile when it comes to the game. We're able to win in different elements and different places. We play on the road more, and if you notice too, toward the end, the teams that play on the road more tend to make it farther into postseason. I think that's what you've seen a little bit on some of the, not to say the SEC is a phenomenal softball conference, but as it's, I think it's a little bit more spread out now with the teams you're seeing in postseason. I think that's because the access to training indoors isn't like limiting us anymore. And I also think that the ability to play on the road in different elements is really important down the road.
By the way, there's schools in the West Coast that are in the Big Ten now, just so you know.
I know. I know. They're hot and they're cold. You got right. Both sides of it. Yeah.
And temperate.
Yes.
Temperate.
I mean, that's an interest. We've talked to other coaches about the same thing. We just talked to Katie Hultin about that, of like, hey, you know, it's a totally different thing now that there are four West Coast teams in it. Mm-hmm. Do you think that opens recruiting
absolutely,
you know, avenues of like, hey, we're going to be playing out there and that type of thing? How does that national conference change things for you?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting, the farther west you go, I think the one thing you notice about recruits is they get excited about the traditional college experience, like the Big Ten, like the football and the four seasons and like all the things that come with this place. And so they're excited about the change and something different for a handful of years. I think us now traveling, I mean, we always went west no matter what in preseason, but now as a conference to be able to go out west multiple times in the year, to know you're going that way, it definitely opens up avenues for players to feel like you can come back home for them.
Sure.
You know, they don't have to travel as much, their families can get to where they want to get to and see us play, so it definitely it opens up that avenue for sure.
And how is the travel ball in Illinois compared to other states around the Midwest? How would you compare it?
I think the three probably biggest ones that you're talking about are Illinois, I think Indiana and Ohio, those three. There's great softball everywhere, but I think those three are probably the strongest in the Midwest.
Sure.
Just with, I think the amount of universities at each of those states kind of opens up their eyes a little bit. But the softball in Illinois is fantastic. I mean, you could look out the World Series this year and pick out an Illinois kid from almost every roster, right? So it's here, it's strong, and it's multi-leveled. I feel like, too, a lot of people say like the farm-grown Illinois kids, like they're just stronger and like they've got more, I don't know, just competitiveness and like grit to them.
Well, let's see, Brett Bielma grew up on a hog farm. Brad Underwood showed cattle in high school, so
I can't say I did any kind of FFA experience or farming. No,
that's right. You're right on that border of like, you're kind of in the farm fields, but you're kind of Chicago land, but you're kind of like on that edge.
She's the diversity hire there.
There you go.
I was looking northward, not somewhere.
That's right.
But I'm sure, though, I mean, Brett Bielma famously, as soon as he got hired, was on the phone with high school coaches, and I'm wondering if there was something similar for you, like, Illinois, here I come. I think it's kind of, you know, the low-hanging fruits to say, well, you got to have more Illinois players, but in reality, there's a lot of good softball in Illinois.
There is, yeah, and I think, I mean, I said this early and wanting to connect with them, but we're hosting a it's going to be out soon, but we're going to host a free clinic for all high school and travel ball coaches in the state of Illinois. And just to make our access better them to introduce themselves, to know about their players. And I think one of the things as coaches we've like transitioned to more, and probably the post-COVID, is just connecting with high school coaches. I think across all sports, we've kind of fell off that with the young recruiting, because we were recruiting so young before these rules were changing. And now with them being high school age, when we recruit them, their high school coaches know a lot about them, and they get to see them in a totally different venue, a different arena than the travel ball circuit, and what it's like to play on a team that isn't built to win, just built for competitive fun. You know, it's just a different experience, and so we get to learn a lot more about them. And but yeah, we're really set on that connection and making sure that we know them and that they know us and they have access to us.
Could you run down, if you would, your coaching staff that you've put together? Yeah. You mentioned Lily Piper, and she's a recent player. She was a phenomenal player at Ohio State.
Yeah.
So I saw her terrorize some Big Ten opponents in Illinois a few times.
She did.
What's her role? I'll start with her, but yeah. You've got a couple of other key hires you've made.
Yeah. Lily will, she's been with me since I started my head coaching journey. So we've been working together for 4 years. Again, I coached her whole career in college. And so, she's a no-brainer. She played for the AU League, AUSL, all of that. And so just really relevant to the game and knows her stuff for a young coach. She's like a fast learner. She'll be running our infield, and she'll be working on hitting with Coach Yeo as well in our offensive philosophy. And so I'm kind of handing that. This is my first time in 20 years to not like be leading an offense, but I'll check and talk about Coach Yeo next. But her and, you know, Coach Piper and I have done this together. She's know what we do. So, but she'll also be navigating our infield defense.
And Yolanda McCray?
Yeah, Yolanda McCray, formerly at Arkansas. She's been pretty much a member of the Power Four coaching world for 20 plus years, longer than I've been doing this. And she, unbelievable hitting mind, has produced, you know, won SEC championships, All-Americans, Super Regionals, all the things. And she took a couple of years off recently just, you know, to take a step back. And she was, as soon as this job became open and I went after it, she was the first person I thought of to call. We've known each other a long time, and brilliant hitting mind again. She'll run our entire offense with Coach Piper from a philosophy standpoint, to training, to all of that thing, preparing for games.
And then Jeremy Manley.
Yeah, Jeremy, previously, his first coaching job actually at college was here at Illinois in 2015 as a volunteer with Coach Sullivan. And his wife is from the Bloomington Normal area, and she went to Normal Community High School, won a state championship, played at Iowa. And so I got to know him through her. So we've known each other for 20 plus years, and we both worked at Ohio at different times. And he was previously at Arizona State and was responsible for Kenzie Brown, a current All-American that was just pitching there. And he was hoping to get back closer to home, and I called him right away too. And he's been on board since the beginning, and I couldn't be more excited about his pitching knowledge and his history and his career. Is really going to shine through for this pitching staff.
I've always been fascinated by softball pitching, of like, you know, a doubleheader, somebody wins the first game, the second starter struggles, and the other person comes in, and, you know, oh, they threw 210 pitches today and this and that. I'm just curious, like, what's the current thinking on limits of pitches and things like that? I know, I'm thinking 25 years ago of softball and friends that played and this and that, that was like, you know, if you got one good pitcher, they can throw every single pitch every single game. I know it's changed. What's the current philosophy on that with, you know, not overworking pitchers?
Yeah, I think you kind of see it from top to bottom, in sense, like, if you've got a pitcher that can ride, let's go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if she's good and she can ride and she's in a good place, like, obviously we're checking on her physically all the time, but if they can, like, we're here for it. Obviously you want to prepare for your whole season and not just overwork someone early, but I think you kind of have to take a step back and look at what the goals are in preseason and how you want to build up toward Big Ten season, and then how you want to get to the end and feel strong at the end at the same time. And so for us this year, we've got 8 pitchers on staff, which everyone kind of gives me this look when I say that. But I think for us to win some more ball games and to move forward, we're going to have to figure out how our staff is going to work together, you know, and piecing it together in the sense of, I don't know if it's much a pitch count per se, or it's just like, let's get through the lineup this one time. Let's see how you look after 3 innings, 4 innings. And then if we feel like it's time, they're getting on time more, or they're starting to zone in on things, let's change it up so we can mix it up, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we do keep the pitch count track, but I think more of it's efficiency and production than it is the pitch count.
When you watch a Texas versus Oklahoma softball game, mm-hmm. like the elite athletes, I mean, right. obviously they're landing the top recruits. What do you see? Like, what is it like, wow, what do these top programs have? What's the aspiration there in the sport?
You see a collective effort to hold the standard. To me, that's what it is. I think there's, and that's one of the things that we'll talk about a lot with the way our coaching philosophy and like what I try to bring in is, but you watch them and it's like, we're not playing, they're playing to win the moment, every single moment. Mm-hmm. Like the pitcher is not thinking I have to strike her out. They're thinking I'm going to throw this pitch the best of my ability right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get the ball back and I'm going to do it again. And I'm going to have that last thought before I do it. And so I think hitting wise, it's the same. They're committed to the process and the standard. Defensively, it's the same thing. And so when you get to the end, the goal is to hopefully be in a position to win. As we all know, so many things factor winning and losing that you can't control. But if we're holding the standard, there's a really cool video of Alabama. I know I'm switching subjects, but Alabama football, I think it's years
I'm
ago.
I'm okay to talk college football.
It's okay. It's like, I think it's like one of the playoff games or national. I'm a huge college football fan myself. So,
oh, here we go.
Yeah, I know.
I now have 11 more questions.
I'm counting down my season until we get going. But they're like up by like 30, and it's like the fourth quarter, 5 minutes left, and something happens where there's a false start, and the quarterback is losing his mind on the center because it's like, I don't care that we're winning by 30. You're not doing what we're supposed to do right now in this moment. And so mm-hmm. I think that's the difference when you – obviously there's an athleticism and, like you said, elite-level talent, but there's a mindset difference, and I think Oklahoma calls it the championship mindset, you know, pretty cliche, but you can see it on the field every single time.
And I've seen that moment between the center and the quarterback. I think it was I've seen it so many times of, like – for some people, it's uncomfortable. They're like, oh, they're fighting. Why are they mm-hmm. mad at each other? Like, no.
Yeah.
That's the intensity needed. Yes. You need to play right at the edge of that if you want to be in the SEC championship game.
Like, yeah. That's what it takes. And it's what are you willing to, I don't say sacrifice, but what are you willing to just like be present in knowing that that's the future goal, you know? And so what are you willing to do today in this moment right now? Be all in just to get yourself to the next moment. And I think that's what separates, you know, the best from the ones that don't come out on top.
You may have asked my question or answered my question then, which is, you're familiar with Ted Lasso, the series, right?
Yes.
Okay. So
love me some
most
Ted
people.
Lasso.
Yeah. Most people know Ted Lasso, a coach of a soccer team in England. You know, he's a football, American football coach, and he's now coaching a sport. He really has no business coaching. So my question for you is, what is the sport you really have no business coaching, but if you did, you might.
If the phone rang,
it might actually work.
Take the job. Oh gosh.
Is it college football? And does,
you know who could coach? Now, Coach Piper will be so happy I said this. She's from Cleveland, like diehard Browns fan, Guardians, all the things. So she's sad most of the time in the fall. But I swear that girl could coach football in 2 seconds. I watch games with her, and I'm like, so she. I would put her up there for that. But for me, that's a great question.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I really shouldn't be coaching this. But you know what?
I think
give me
tennis.
A crack at that. Yeah?
Yeah. I'm a huge tennis fan. So I think the mentality of tennis is always the challenge for me. Like I played in high school, played tennis in high school. It was one of my three sports. And it made me the most strong mentally of all the sports I've ever played. And because you're just alone. There's like golf is kind of like that. But I would love the challenge of like coaching tennis and to be at a distance and also like train and to let the athletes go.
That's this spring and summer we had Brad Dancer on and Elizabeth Lumpkin Robinson. And like there's nobody else but you out there to fight that other person. Mm-hmm. There's no other 8 team members that can pick you up. Like that's tough.
It is. It's and you don't even get coaching. You just have to trust the training and make the adjustments. It's amazing.
Your family is coming with, obviously. What do you want to tell us about your family?
Yeah, my wife Christina has come with. We just we're hoping to close on our new house in a couple weeks, and so getting that settled. And she's coming with. Our kids are grown. I have three. I have twin boys that are almost 20. He'll be 20 this month. One of them's in school at Ohio University. He's in the arts program. He's going to finish up there. And mother son Jonah's working, living the adult life. And then my daughter Olivia just graduated high school. So she's also going to be attending Ohio University to start there and see if I can convince her to make the switch to the orange and blue. But we'll see. But yeah, so they're kind of living their own life now. I've got three adults, essentially.
Yeah.
Hard to call them that as a parent. But yeah, three adults. And so we've got a couple dogs and a couple cats, and they're coming with us. So
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
But you did find it. You found a place that you know.
Yeah.
If you don't mind sharing, did you pick Champaign, Urbana, or Savoy?
I picked Champaign.
Okay.
Good. Yeah.
That's the right answer.
Yeah. Sorry, they tried to pull me over to Savoy, but we found a good spot in Champaign. It's 12 minutes from, you know, the field. And I like being in town. I'm a big fan. Like in Athens, I lived 6 minutes from from our field. I love being in the mix of it and being able to get where I need to get to quickly.
Well, we couldn't be more delighted to have you here.
Yeah.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but there's a lot of energy around the fact that you're the head coach here.
Yeah. So I felt that. And it's been really cool. Even, you know, I had recruits a couple days into this from the portal, and we were at Jarling's getting ice cream. You know, I had to go back and visit there, and we're standing in line, and I get like a tap on the shoulder. It's like, are you Jenna Hall, the new softball coach? And like everywhere I went, even today, I'm getting in the car and someone's like, new softball coach. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, we're so excited you're back. And so I don't know, it's the best feeling. I couldn't be more excited. I know I am as well. And just know that we're going to give it everything we got, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. Welcome
back. Thank you.
Back.
Yeah, appreciate it.
And would love to, at least before the season gets going, if not more, have you back to get ready for the 2027 season.
Love to talk about all the softball. Yep.
All right. Thanks
for joining us. Thank you, guys.
Jenna Hall with us here on Light the Eye. I enjoyed those conversations with Katie Holtine and Jenna Hall, and I also admire your restraint there. As soon as Jenna Hall said that she really loves college football, you were ready to go.
I was ready to go. I want to know, like, every bowl game she's watched recently, her, you know, where were you when? I have 1,000 questions. But, yes, I'm getting better at not restraining that part of my brain.
She was a athlete here from 03 to 06. And then 07, she was a student assistant manager for the softball team. So, man, she...
03 to 06.
She went through some valleys there, huh?
One win, three wins, two wins, two wins. So as a student, she saw 8 football wins total in 4 years.
But then, as a volunteer coach...
out of nowhere...
a Rose Bowl team.
Yes, that's the famous stat. 8 wins over 4 years and then 9 wins in one season.
That's called a turnaround.
Yes, that was quite the...
And she mentioned Katie Holtine, like, oh, I know what Katie did last year.
Yes. Yes. It's so... I mean, that's how good businesses work, right? Like any corporation, if you see that this person has turned the marketing department around and everything else, then the person hired to handle the accounting feels that momentum of like, hey, everybody's stepping up their game, I better step up mine. So that's part of how an athletic department works. But yes, to be expected to do what Katie did of, oh, hey, the first year, win your first, what was it, 8 games or whatever, and then go to the NCAA tournament your very first season after a losing season the year before you took over. That was, hey, you know, good luck. I mean, I wouldn't put it past her. I love what she had to say about, like, what do you see when you watch Texas and Oklahoma? I see mindset. I see players committed. Yeah, there's talent, sure, but I see the top athletes that are every pitch that are so intense. She sees the intensity. I love that.
Well, and hopefully what I saw from a distance with softball in the last couple of years was just maybe a little bit of lack of, again, I'm not in anybody's head, but just seemed like there wasn't the belief from Ted Lasso realm of just that we can do this, because there wasn't this dearth of talent necessarily, but winning is hard.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about my restraint. When she was talking about that, or when you were referencing some of that, there is this, like, how many times have we seen it with like a good, like Florida State a few years ago in football? Like they had just gone 12-0 and suddenly it starts to fall apart and they're 3-9. Like you still have talent. You still have 45 4-stars on your roster and this and that. It's just once it starts to slip, then it just kind of like gets out of control and this and that. You know, I love that side of discussions with coaches on like, yeah, sure, you need good athletes. But that mental commitment that, hey, we're going to be a team now versus like, oh man, we're probably going to strike out here with the bases loaded. You know, that's a huge part of it all.
All right. Well, thank you so much to our guests, Katie Hultin, Illinois women's soccer coach, and Jenna Hall, Illinois softball coach. Thanks to our hosts here at the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning inside the Armory on the campus of the U of I. And thanks to our sponsors, Logic Coworking, and of course, the U of I Credit Union. We'll talk some football next time we're together as camp is in swing. And before you know it, it'll all get going. Appreciate you joining us. We'll be together again soon, the next time we light the eye.